You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kan. Thanks for being here. And as we do on Mondays, we slow down developments at the Capitol, talk through bills one at a time. Here's a rundown. We'll look at the governor's cabinet confirmations. We'll look at legislation that gives the hemp industry a boost. And we start with the assembly rule changes that would give unlimited attempts to override a governor's veto. So what do you think of changes the assembly made to its own rules, allowing them to try to override a governor's veto as often as they like? And in terms of cabinet confirmations, which department leaders or cabinet members would you like to voice support for? Who do you oppose? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and she's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. She joins us most Mondays. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the governor's veto powers. They're again a topic of discussion. What did the assembly vote on regarding veto override attempts in the chamber?
So under this new rule that was approved by the state assembly, lawmakers would have unlimited attempts in the state assembly to override a gubernatorial veto. That's a pretty big change because previously they only had one shot at getting that two-thirds vote necessary to do so. So this kind of just opens up the possibilities for them to do that in the future.
Okay. And so we immediately say why. Why did supporters say it's necessary?
So Republicans are arguing that they should have another shot at doing this if, say, public opinion changes, they get more feedback from their constituents about something, they're able to, you know, talk to their colleagues in the legislature a little bit more about a particular issue. You know, sometimes we see bills come back session after session, right? They don't pass one time, they can pass another time.
They get tweaked and then they come back. And
right.
Yeah.
So lawmakers, Republican lawmakers are saying that they should have that sort of opportunity for vetoes as well.
How do the Democrats feel about this?
Well, Democrats think it's really inappropriate. They think that it's kind of opening up the stage for something like we saw in North Carolina earlier this year, where Republican lawmakers held a really important veto override vote when Democrats weren't in the chamber. They were at a 9/11 memorial ceremony. And Democratic lawmakers are saying if Republicans have more shots at taking an override vote, they can do that on short notice. They can do that when we're not there. This is something that is obviously very important and has great consequence when it's done. So they don't want it to just kind of be thrown around and have it be incredibly easy to do that.
So this was one of the rule changes, being able to bring something back again and again. What were some of the other rule changes?
So these vary in degrees of kind of wonkiness in terms of their changes. So some of the other ones that are a little bit easier to understand, one would limit Democrats' ability to break for caucus during floor debates. So to take a break to discuss a bill, sometimes they'll do that when a new amendment is introduced to a bill, something changes, they just want to discuss something, decide how they're going to talk about it, how they're going to vote on it. Under this new rule change, Republicans could bar them from doing that. It doesn't preclude them from doing it in all instances. They'll still be able to do it sometimes. But under this rule, the majority, rather, I think it's really important to point out that this isn't just Republicans or Democrats. It's whoever has the majority in the state assembly can make some of these decisions. So that could be Democrats someday. Another change that Democrats were really frustrated about was a provision that would allow Republicans to set debate times without Democrats' consent. So under the process before this rule change, and will continue, honestly, is that Republicans and Democrats meet before session. They talk about how long they think they're going to need for debate, say, we want 10 hours on Tuesday, we want 11 hours on Tuesday to talk about specific things. Under this new rule, if those negotiations kind of break down and they can't agree on a time, they're going to be able to say, we as Republicans have decided we're going to debate for 8 hours and you really don't have any say in it. And that's concerning to Democrats because what happens when you have those set debate times is once you hit it, you kind of hit a brick wall and you say, this is it. We're done. We're holding a vote. And Democrats contend, you know, what if we want to have a little bit more of a discussion? What if we feel like our contribution to this debate wasn't fully fleshed out because we didn't have as much time as we wanted to have.
We're talking with Laurel White. She's WPR State Capitol reporter. What would you like state lawmakers to take up this session? What issues are top of mind in your area of the state? What questions do you have about what is happening at the Capitol, and what bills are you watching? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Nancy now, joining us from Wausau. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there. My comment on the whole thing was that I just, especially with these veto powers, I really feel that it's obstruction on parts of the Republicans to make sure that the Democrats can't get anything done.
So you feel like this has overtures of the lame duck laws?
Correct, it does.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Laurel, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that that's definitely something that was discussed in the Capitol last week, that Democratic lawmakers thought that this was kind of an extension of Republicans trying to expand their power in the Capitol. Obviously, they have pretty strong majorities in the state legislature. They took those steps in the lame duck session to give themselves a little bit more power over things that traditionally had kind of been exclusively the purview of the governor's office. So Democrats are saying again, you know, now you're going to have, under these new assembly rules, more control over debate times and when we can break for meetings and unlimited attempts to override a governor's veto. And so Democrats say they're really kind of pushing the envelope on this.
Some of these rule changes are linked to a disability accommodation, and State Representative Jimmy Anderson is joining us later here in the State Capitol Report to talk about his experience as a lawmaker who is in a wheelchair. You were there for his speech last Thursday. What was that like?
Well, it was a really, I think, singular experience for me as a Capitol reporter for a couple different reasons, one of which was Representative Anderson chose to do something called the call of the assembly before he gave his remarks, which is a procedural move that lawmakers can use when they compel every member of the state assembly to come and sit in their seats. The doors of the assembly are closed. This is meaningful because sometimes lawmakers go off into other rooms to have meetings. They leave to go to their office at certain times during debate, kind of trickle in and out of the chamber. This brought everybody in, kind of sealed the room, made it a very kind of solemn space. At the beginning of his remarks, he said, "I've been through a lot. I think after all I've been through, you should all at least have to listen to what I have to say." He gave his speech, which was very emotional. And I think at the end of it, there was really a palpable tension in the room. I feel like lawmakers were really absorbing what he had to say and really appreciative of how incredibly personal his remarks were, which, you know, lawmakers get personal on the floor sometimes. But I think to this extent is something that we rarely, if ever, see.
So do you think the assembly is likely to attempt veto overrides anytime soon?
Well, we do know that Assembly Speaker Voss told an Associated Press reporter last week that he wouldn't be surprised if the assembly took up some potential vetoes later this fall. So that isn't obviously a concrete yes or no, and we never know. Things are very mutable in the state legislature, but it sounds like it could very much be possible.
WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide as we look at the issues in front of lawmakers. And let's hear from you. How do you think the hemp crop should be regulated? What questions do you have about the policy around the hemp industry? What policies do you think are necessary for sexual assault kit processing and storage? How can Wisconsin do better? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. There is more State Cap in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a roundup of political developments on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join us tomorrow evening at 7 here on the Ideas Network as the candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination, they face off each other for their next debate. We will bring you live coverage and analysis from NPR. That's tomorrow night at 7, right here on the Ideas Network and streaming online at WPR.org. Right now, we're taking developments one at a time with WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White as our guide. In terms of cabinet confirmations, which department leaders or cabinet members would you like to voice support for? Who do you oppose? On the issue of sexual assault kits, what policies do you think are necessary for processing and storage? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Laurel White stays with us. Laurel, let's look at cabinet confirmations. The state Senate met Tuesday. They confirmed a number of Governor Evers' cabinet picks made up, you know, almost a year ago. Mm-hmm. So what did you see there? Who was confirmed?
So we had five confirmations last week of Evers' cabinet secretaries, one of which was his Department of Administration Secretary Joel Brennan. That's somebody that you hear quite a bit from during budget negotiations. The Department of Administration has an important role there. Four others that were confirmed: Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr, Revenue Secretary Peter Barca, former state legislator, Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kohler, and Financial Institutions Secretary Kathy Blumenfeld.
And a number of the acting secretaries have yet to be confirmed. So who are still waiting for a vote?
So everybody else, all of the other secretaries, I think the big
one. If you did not hear your name.
Right, right. If you did not, you're still an appointee. So I think kind of the big ones that we're really waiting for votes on that have been a little bit more controversial in the Capitol in terms of having some lawmakers voice concerns. Department of Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson, that's a really big one that's still outstanding. In terms of other kind of big departments that we hear from a lot, Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we'll be keeping an eye out for those. Of course, I think it's important to mention that, you know, the folks that aren't confirmed yet, they are just continuing on in their jobs, just like if they were confirmed.
What's taking so long?
Well, you know, it's a process where it's really kind of up to the state Senate on when they schedule these votes. So lawmakers have committee hearings where they hear testimony. They meet from these secretaries. They hold votes. Much like a bill, these appointments have to come out of a committee and go before the full legislature. So it just kind of working its way through that process in terms of scheduling and prioritizing of Senate leaders.
Well, let's look at sexual assault kits and how they're managed. The Senate took up two bills. They passed unanimously. What do these bills change?
So these are in reaction to, some folks might remember, a backlog of sexual assault kits that has been reported on pretty extensively in Wisconsin over the past few years. That backlog has since been resolved, but lawmakers wanted to kind of put some checks in place to make sure that doesn't happen again. So one of these bills would set up timelines for processing the kits, sharing the kits between different entities. So, for example, if a victim wants to report a sexual assault to law enforcement, they have a kit collected. A healthcare professional needs to notify law enforcement about that kit being collected within 24 hours, kind of get that ball rolling. Under state statute, officially, you have to do this now under this provision.
So it gives a real framework, the process a framework. And then mm-hmm. they have to store these kits, I understand, for a decade.
That's right. And there are different kind of benchmarks for storage depending on whether the kit was tested or whether it wasn't. So when a kit is collected, a victim says whether or not they want to pursue testing and identification and that kind of legal pathway or not. If they choose not to do that right away, the kit needs to be stored for a longer amount of time in state archives. Advocates say this is really important because sometimes victims of sexual assault don't necessarily want to go forward with that testing right away, mm-hmm. but a few years down the road, they decide, you know, I do kind of want to pursue criminal charges in this. So that sets up an avenue for them to do that.
So these bills, they flew through the Senate. Will they have a similar path in the Assembly?
Well, you never know. The bodies are very different on some issues, but I haven't heard individuals in the assembly raising concerns about these bills. The second of the two bills creates an online system where victims can track where their kit is in the process to offer some more transparency for that. So I haven't heard about opposition in the state assembly that would trip these up. But, you know, you never know. And also, as we were talking about with cabinet appointees, sometimes scheduling and issues just cause things to move a little bit slower than you might think.
Talking with Laurel White, she's WPR State Capitol reporter, and you can join in. How do you think the hemp crop should be regulated? What questions do you have about the policy around this industry? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel, let's look at hemp. In 2017, Wisconsin legalized industrial hemp. Last year, there was the federal farm bill, then legalized hemp across the country. So what did state senators take up last week?
So this is a really wonky bill that essentially what it does is it kind of brings Wisconsin's hemp laws in line with those new federal laws.
Okay.
Because what happened was is the state legalized hemp before the country did. So when the federal farm bill did that, essentially it made Wisconsin's laws outdated and put the state you know, kind of at risk for individuals who are engaging in this industry. So Wisconsin had to kind of get these technical fixes in so things could continue as they were. And we've done several stories on this at WPR, but this is really an industry that people are looking to kind of be the next frontier in some ways for agriculture in Wisconsin. This was a really popular crop quite a while ago, decades ago, before it was outlawed in Wisconsin. So proponents of this are saying we want to bring that back. We want to give this to farmers as something they can rotate in their fields and other crops, kind of provide a different income stream for some individuals in the industry.
We also saw four pieces of legislation to address Lyme disease. What are we seeing out of the legislature on these strategies to contain Lyme disease?
So these are bills aimed mostly at state parks and some things mm-hmm. happening in state parks. So there would have to be signage in state parks warning people about contracting Lyme disease and other illnesses. There would have to be insect repellent for sale in state parks and state forests. There's also a couple provisions in here that would require the State Department of Natural Resources to do Lyme disease brochures that are available for parks with information, and also to do a statewide campaign just educating Wisconsinites about Lyme disease. We are one of the highest, the states with the highest incidence of Lyme disease in the country in recent years. So this is something that lawmakers really want to put a stop to.
Yeah, yeah, certainly address, I guess, on a policy side. You're mm-hmm. seeing a lot more movement there. Let's look at the F-35. The Senate passed a resolution, not legislation, voicing their support for military jets at Truax, the Madison airfield. Break down this disagreement. What's happening over these F-35 jets?
Well, this is a really contentious debate that Madison community officials have been engaged in for quite a while. Essentially, what's going on here is that F-35s might be moving into Truax, the Air Force Base in Madison, replacing F-16s. The concern from opponents is that F-35s are going to be flying more often and they're going to be louder, and they're going to disrupt the neighborhood around the Air Force Base that has a lot of low-income housing and communities of color. So they say that this change would have a disproportionate impact on those individuals in Madison. What this resolution in the state legislature would do is really just either voice support or opposition for this move. It's really a symbolic vote. It doesn't carry really any weight with the military in terms of whether the decision is made or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of sends a message of whether the legislature is on board. So this resolution was sponsored primarily by Republicans. One Democrat was signed on as a sponsor to it. And supporters are just arguing that this is a great move for Madison. It provides long-term security and stability in terms of what the Air Force Base is going to be doing in the future. They call it, you know, a flight mission, securing a flight mission. They say it's going to create some new jobs, 64 new jobs, retain about 1,650 jobs that are already there. They really point to the economic impact. So a very certainly contentious debate in the Madison area that kind of, when the legislature takes it up, it becomes a statewide conversation.
Well, you know, people starting to call their lawmakers and lawmakers responding at the state level. But it's ultimately we have to watch what the military decides.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. She's co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, it's news, and then the State Capitol Report continues as we examine the new assembly rules passed last week, as Laurel was talking about. We'll be joined by Representative Jimmy Anderson. If you have a disability, have you ever had trouble getting an accommodation at your workplace? Do you think all state lawmakers should be able to phone in to meetings? We're at 800-642-1234. You have a line. You can join in. We'll be back after this news update. More State Cap to come here on the Ideas Network.